Coming up on Chasing the Natty, we have participated in our fair share of college fantasy best balls, and we've seen a few strategies and trends we want to highlight for you all today. We'll discuss when to take certain kind of players and what kind of positions to take when and how we'll be applying those to future drafts that we will be in. We have all of that and more coming right after this.
Sellers picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching to the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown!
It's caught! Jeremiah Smith! Touchdown, Ohio State! The legend grows!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Tuesday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us at all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the off season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com, subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog, Best Ball. Really, if you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further, make sure you get, when you sign up for one of our yearly memberships, you use that promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off of your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do that, that's totally fine. You can just show us some love by leaving a like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTube side of things. Totally free for you to do, and it means the world to us. And then on the podcast side of things, leave a 5-star review. Make sure you follow the show. Helps us out a ton. If you have any further questions or want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And joining me today is a special little guest named Chris Battistel, the host of the 1 Foot Down podcast over with Fantasy and Frames, their college fantasy football podcast. Make sure you guys go check that out. Chris, welcome to the show. Just realized, did I pronounce your last name correctly there?
You absolutely nailed it. And I must say,
thank
Jared,
God.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back. Flattery gets you everywhere. I think that's the first time I've ever heard someone refer to me as little. So I appreciate it, Jared. I appreciate it wholeheartedly, my man.
Oh, again, glad to have you on, man. I love your stuff. You've been doing a great job over there at Fantasy and Frames. Thank again, you guys, you. If I remember correctly, you're doing a bi-weekly show here to start things off, and then obviously as we get closer to the season, you will kind of kick things into high gear. For those who probably maybe don't know what it is you're doing over there with Fantasy and Frames, you and Aiden Weingartner, he is your co-host, by the way. Love that you brought on Aiden. He's a great guy. I listened to y'all's show this past week. Y'all did a fantastic job. Tell the people out there what it is like you're bringing to the college fantasy space with your content and everything like that. What do you plan on doing as you get closer to the season, stuff like that?
Yeah, we're just trying to make the college fantasy football game a little bit more accessible. You, Jared, yourself, along with many other great people in the space before me, have been doing a great job giving people the information and actionable content that they need for college fantasy football growing the game. So we're just trying to be another arm or leg to the beast that is college fantasy football. We run 1 Foot Down, a college fantasy football podcast. We got articles that we're producing throughout the offseason. I'm working on rankings. We just started off season 2 last week, episode 1, where we talked transfer portal, some of our favorite winners and losers, and then up until the season, like you mentioned, bi-weekly, and then season-long weekly. We got Freshmen to Fear coming up next Monday, just talking about freshmen that we think could have an impact for the CFF season in 2025, man.
Oh, that's perfect timing. I know a lot of my CFF Dynasty leagues are starting to get ready to kick off and everything. I was just basically renewing the Natty Chasers Dynasty League today and everything like that. I I'm looking at my CFF Dynasty rankings that I keep saying I'm going to put together, and here we are 3 months later, and life gets in the way when you have a 40-hour-a-week job. It turns out you're not just a college student. But again, we got a great show for you guys today. Chris, you and I have an unhealthy addiction to these college fantasy best balls, and we've been in quite a few, and shout out to Carb G, the Devi Royale, ourselves over here at Campus of Canton, Insider CFF, Ethan Sowers, like a bunch of people have been running these best balls. They've been great. They're perfect for us gathering some ADP data and stuff like that. And Chris, you and I have been in plenty of them. And that's kind of the main thing that people are doing right now. It's a great way to prepare for your actual leagues once, you know, the season comes around and stuff like that. You participate in one and you're instantly gifted a draft board of, you know, 360 players that you can use that board as a way to kind of narrow down your research and say, like, all right, here's 360 names that I should probably know about by the time the season kind of rolls around. Because, like, frankly, a lot of our redraft leagues are smaller than, you know, 20 or 30 rounds. So it's a great way to get involved, and it's what a lot of people are doing right now. So I figured now is a great time for us to kind of look back on a lot of the drafts we've done so far. And you and I have brought three drafts each. Could be our own, could be somebody else's. Again, it kind of varies a little bit, but we just want to highlight a few things that we think are really good, either strategies or really good trends that we kind of notice people doing with their best ball team so far, and yeah, give some shout outs with it. Chris, again, you've been in how many of these leagues have you been in so far?
I've slowed down over the past little bit, but I think I'm around 11 total since the start of the whole redraft season. But I've done a couple supplementals as well, so I've been kind of involved with that. And most recently, I've been treating my supplemental drafts, my C2C supplemental drafts, as CFF drafts anyway. So, I've been about 11 to 12 or 13 at the moment, man.
Oh, wow. I think I'm right around the 10 range as well, and I'm probably about to kick off another one here later this week if I'm feeling brave enough to do that while I'm on vacation. But even still, like, again, it gave us plenty of teams to take a look at here, and so I think we'll go ahead and jump right on into it. Let's head on over to this. So yeah, basically what I tasked Chris with, I was like, give me a team, and they give me like a thesis that you take away from this team, right? Give me something that you think that it can be applied to other people. So we'll start with my first one here, and this one was very basic. If you're looking at the graphic, I've really only highlighted two players here, and it's specifically something I want to highlight here at the end of drafts. It's kind of where I've put most of my focus for this episode, was what to do kind of in the back end of drafts. And this is a team from Carb G, Ryan Carpenter. He runs a ton of the best balls right now. If you want to get involved, reach out to him at CFF_bestball. That's the quickest way to follow that account, and you'll find a way, you'll find yourself into a best ball league pretty quickly if you're interested. But he did a team here, and in his, what is this, 23rd to 24th round pick, I wanted to highlight two quarterbacks he took, in Haas Haney out of Oklahoma State and Anthony Calandria, quarterback formerly of Virginia, now at UNLV. My thesis for this draft is there is absolutely zero reason, none at all, to play it safe with your late round quarterbacks. You absolutely should be swinging for the fences with your fifth and sixth quarterback. I usually take about five or six quarterbacks in my draft, and usually I will wait to right about round 7 through 12, usually around that range, 7 through 13-ish. Four of those six picks will end up being quarterbacks, and I'll kind of make up the core of my quarterback group. But then I always kind of leave kind of two stragglers, like, that I will wait pretty late. And that's when you gotta take guys that are potential league winners. And there's not a ton of those guys out there this year, right? We were kind of discussing this with Joe last week that really the North Texas quarterback situation, I'd say maybe like the UNLV ones, are like probably some of the only real quarterback competitions out there with so much known at the position this year. But that's kind of the thing, right? Because so much is known, you're inherently getting your safe, quote-unquote, quarterback picks when you take your normal guys in the first half of the draft, right? Yep. Normally you're trying to kind of balance things out of like, oh, I take a kind of non-safer option up high, maybe grab some safer guys later. Nah, this year, like I said, because there's so much known in the position, you're likely already covering that safe part without even really thinking about it. So in my opinion, don't be drafting guys in like the last 10 rounds, guys like Dylan Raiola, Cedric Bailey, Drew Aller, a guy that I probably need to get away from a little bit, Gunnar Stockton, Luke Altmaier, Aiden Childs. These are guys that are like 18, you know, 17, 18 fantasy points per game kind of guys, right? You sit there thinking like, oh yeah, they'll give me a base floor every week. The guys you're taking earlier are already getting you that. Shoot for guys like Haas Haney, right? Super athletic in a system we know we kind of like there with Mike Gundy. Anthony Calandria, Dan Mullen, QB1. You could possibly be getting him there in the last 10 rounds. Dwayne Coleman goes off in this range. The guy who's replacing Bryson Daly, that same offensive coordinator that made Daly a monster last year, still there. Connor Harrell over there with, oh my God, Tim Albin. Tim Albin and Charlotte, right? Like, we know dual threat quarterbacks do well. Drew Mestermaker goes off in this round. Those are the guys you need to be taking with your last 1 to 2 quarterback picks. Don't be taking a guy that's just going to get you 17, 18 points a game. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. And I'm going to touch on that kind of draft strategy outside the quarterback a little bit later with one of the drafts that I picked out. But I totally 100% agree with you on that, with waiting on those four tight ends, six quarterbacks. So I'm attacking my couple top end quarterbacks a little early, and then the back end guys, I'm going to save the, you know, my two to fill up the six at the back end is what I'm going to save for that part of the draft, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, because like, I'm looking at it. Let me pull up the ADP here real quick. And for those of you who are watching on YouTube, you'll actually be able to see the ADP. So like, let's take a look at like guy like so past 240, right? Let's take a look at some of these guys. There's Anthony Calandria, Brendan Lewis. Again, we know we like that Memphis offense, and like I don't think Lewis fits that system very well, right? But if he's a dual threat quarterback and he's successful in that system, that could pay off really, really well there. There's Mestermaker. There's Coleman. Right, but like Aguilar, Tennessee, I kind of go back and forth on that one, right? Because like we know we like the system, but I really don't like Aguilar's skill set very much. If you think like a guy like Jalen Henderson, right? If you don't buy into the idea that Markiel is the starting quarterback there at West Virginia, take a shot on Henderson, right? Like yeah. that could pay off huge dividends for you. Bishop Davenport at South Alabama, right? Like if he wins that job, he's a dual threat guy in that system. That could pay off for you very well, right? So that's what I'm saying. Like grab guys like that. Don't be going after, you know, Bailey, Raiola. To me, like you already got the floor early on. So
yep.
Is there any guys that kind of come to mind in your drafts, Chris, that you think kind of fit this description?
Yeah, Ethan Basco, if he wins the starting position over at Liberty, I think he'll kind of fit what they want to do over there. Connor Wiegman at Houston's another guy that you can wait on and pick up at the back end of your drafts, man. Yeah, there's a few guys that you can take to fill out your quarterback room that will not give you that safe floor, but have the potential to give you those boom weeks with what they can do on the field, man. That's what you want for those back end picks.
Absolutely. All right, let's get rid of this ADP. We'll bring that back later, I'm sure. But Chris, let's highlight one of your drafts here. This one comes to us. This is actually one of your drafts.
Yeah.
But it's similar theme of quarterbacks. What do you got here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to date myself here and give myself the good old Barry Horowitz pat on the back. But one of the sentiments throughout the whole offseason, and I hate to beat a dead horse, but we're going to dig that dead horse up, jump off the top rope and give it a Macho Man elbow. Wait on drafting quarterbacks. It's not just a theory. It's a working, practice this, especially this season. Without that, you don't need to go chase that stud quarterback at the top end of your drafts. By punting the QB early, you open the door for stacking high volume positional players, guys who will win you weeks at wide receiver, running back, and tight end. I ran an experiment with this one draft to see how far back I could push taking a quarterback, and I kind of like what I ended up with here. I got Diego Pavia in round 12, a 23 fantasy point per game quarterback. He's mobile, he's steady, he's locked into the system. He's going to give me some of those boom weeks, so I'm going to expect some weeks where Diego Pavia is going to give me a QB1 outing. Followed by that, I took Sawyer Robinson from Baylor, another guy, 21.8 fantasy points per game. I got him in round 15. After Sawyer Robinson, directly after Sawyer Robinson, as my third quarterback to kind of round out my room, I got Brandon Sorsby, dual threat quarterback, 23.5 fantasy points per game last season. All these guys this late are solid floor quarterbacks. I don't have to worry about going up and reaching, you know, in those mid-early rounds to try to worry about solidifying or taking a stud QB at the top of my draft. That's a full QB room. And then I rounded it out with Daquan Finn from Miami of Ohio, Brendan Lewis, and then I took a little shot on JC French there at the back end. If he wins that job at Georgia Southern, I think he has some potential to give us some big weeks. Maybe not as many as we'd like, but one or two weeks where he can kind of build me up in those weekly rankings for best ball, I'm going to take it. You mentioned you didn't like Brendan Lewis too much in that system, and I kind of agree a little bit, but I'm excited to see what he's going to be able to do at Memphis as a, what, eight-year senior now, six-year senior?
Good Lord, he could be a 100th-year senior as far as I'm concerned.
that's where I'm at with the quarterbacks, man.
I mean, I agree with you. Like I said earlier, my main strategy going into best balls is mostly keying in on that kind of round 7 to 13 range and just loading up on some of those quarterbacks right in that range because there's so many great options. By the way, I need to date myself a little bit here. I had to look up the Barry Horowitz reference here. I'm quickly learning that there's a lot of people in college fantasy that love wrestling, and boy, do I not get any of the references. I think was it Insider CFF did the whole thread and about comparing everybody to wrestlers, and I was just sitting there wondering, like, I hope mine's flattering because I have no idea who these people are.
That's me in Marvel and Star Wars, man. I'm lost in that world,
buddy. Oh boy, that's the opposite for me, man. I'm all in on that. Your QB room here, though, like I brought up last year's stats. Let me tell you, right? Yeah, Diego Pavia, right? QB 30 last year. You got him in the 12th round. Sawyer Robertson, QB 34. You got him in the 15th round. Brendan Sorsby, quarterback 16 last year. You got him in the 16th round. Like, that really just goes to show, like, how deep this quarterback class is. Like in a normal year, guys like that would be pushed up, right? You're talking, like, guys that would go in, like, the, you know, 7th, 8th round and stuff like that. But they're falling this far because, one, there's a lot of other guys, a lot of other systems that provide maybe a little bit higher upside than those guys. But even still, this is exactly my point. Your floor is taken care of with those first three picks, and then you look at those back three picks. We already talked about Brendan Lewis, right? Like I said, I don't think he fits in the system very well, but if he does and they do use him well, he has insane upside. Daquan Finn, we've already seen him in the MAC twice, and he was on pace before he got injured to be a top 30 quarterback in CFF in those systems, so great pick there. And then I don't know about JC French. Again, another one that I'm not sure he really fits that system, but I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt as a second year starter. And again, you got him as your QB 30. Like, nothing wrong with that. But but again, like, let me pull the ADP back up, right? Because, like, I was talking about later guys, but you look at the top round of quarterbacks, and this is something we've definitely discussed on the show many times already this offseason, but we have one of the deepest quarterback classes for college fantasy in a long time, but the ceiling, the top guys are probably the weakest we've had in a long time. It's kind of an interesting paradox, right? So, like, guys like Klubnik, Sellers, I mean, Manning's going off as QB3, and he has started a game, but even still, like, he hasn't gotten, like, a ton of starting experience, right? Like, it makes you quickly wonder, like, is it worth me going up and getting those guys when I could just wait? Let's see, 7th round, that's going to be 84-ish. So you wait to seventh round. That's where Sawyer Robertson's going. Sam Levick, Tucker Gleason, Austin Simmons, Bryson Barnes. Like, I'd rather wait and grab those guys. And like you said, we target some of those other positions that aren't as deep, like running back and wide receiver early. And you grab plenty of great options there in the middle of the rounds there. So fully agree with you.
And if you look at, if you look at the top three of the top five in the ADP there, I know if you're listening, you can't see the graphic, but Arch Manning QB3, Damon Williams QB4, and Micah Aliotta QB5. That's four combined starts between three of the top five quarterbacks at ADP right now. Mm-hmm. That's giving you the luxury to take a high productive quarterback at the back ends or mid rounds of your draft. If you go back to the team I drafted, I ended up with Darius Taylor, Jaheim White in the top two rounds, Eric McAllister, Telly Johnson. Unfortunately, I picked Trevor Pena while he was still with Syracuse before he transferred to Penn State there, so I kind of got bit with that a little bit. But then Yasin Willis, Emmett Johnson, my running back room is stacked. Wayshon Parker there. Matthew Coleman from San Jose State. I kind of like that Trayshon Hurry transferred out of there, so he kind of give a little bit more room for Coleman. Rounded out my wide receiver room with Ian Strong. So I got Coleman, Strong, Pena, McAllister. Obviously not the sexiest wide receiver room after the transfer portal, but I still believe in Ian Strong. With Trayshon Hurry, like I mentioned, going, I kind of like what Coleman's going to bring. Then I got Daniel Highshaw to solidify my running back room. So I love the core of running backs I got to give me some of those boom weeks. I filled the role of my positional players with solidified studs. And then I just filled my quarterback room with a bunch of safe floor guys and guys that could potentially give me some big boom weeks to take me over the top in these best ball tournaments, man.
I definitely remember it was the Fantasy Points guys when they were doing their Dynasty Month last year. They were highlighting, you know, teams that ended up winning Dynasty Leagues. And one thing they kind of took away from that was the teams that won at quarterback, they didn't really have the guys you were expected. They didn't have, like, the Jaden Daniels of the world or something like that. They were filled with guys like Joey Aguilar at App State that year that just provided that safe floor every single week that never really lost you a single week. And you got plenty of that this year. Let me ask you, Chris, real quick. I'm not quite as a purist of you when it comes to the late quarterback because, like, if a guy starts falling, right, like if Sellers falls to like the third round, I'm going to take him there in the third round. I think that's a great value at that point and everything. Are there guys that you are personally willing to take early on that, like, if they fall to a certain value, right, or are you just purely, like, I don't, like, just not touching quarterback at all until a certain range?
Yeah, everyone's got a price, obviously. If I'm going to get a tremendous value on a quarterback, am I going to take my running back three or my wide receiver three or my tight end one? Or am I going to take this quarterback here that probably should have went 2 to 3 rounds? I can't really put a name on a guy, but if there's a value in the draft, I'm going to scoop it up, Jared.
No, for sure.
Absolutely, man.
All right, let's move on to my next draft that I want to highlight here. And this one comes to us from Ethan Sowers, one of his drafts. And this is one of the ones I had where I kind of have a takeaway on running backs here. And my takeaway here is basically a version of, again, my buddy Mitch Hart's, like, zag when others are zigging and everything. But particularly this year, I think it does apply. And that is, running backs, man, like, there's a reason why we're drafting so many of them in the first couple rounds of drafts, right? Like, by the time you reach the fourth round, you know, you're looking at 23 running backs that have already come off the board. That's half the draft at that point, right? People are wanting to hit RB early because there's very few safe options and things turn into a cluster very, very quickly. That also leads to a lot of guys that maybe their position in that room isn't as strong as we think they are, but they're still getting pushed up because people don't want to feel left behind at the position. I say, if you're somebody, especially in the latter half of your draft, you sit there, you get through about the first 15 picks, and you're like, ah, man, like I usually like to have like 9, 10 running backs, and I've only gotten like 3 or 4 through 10 rounds of the draft and everything. What am I going to do this back end? It feels like things are going to get bad very quickly. I say, and this is my thesis for this draft, try to take advantage of the rooms where there's more uncertainty than we tend to let on about. Right. In Ethan, in my opinion, in this draft that he does here, does that to a T. His entire back end of running backs is filled with guys like that. Catron Allen there in the 11th round out of Penn State. Evan Pryor out of Cincinnati. Reuben Owens out of Texas A&M. Peyton Lewis out of Tennessee. Jacoby Williams out of Texas Tech. LaShawn Williams out of Kansas. He's rolling the dice on all these running back rooms. Right, but here's the thing, all those running back positions, we know for a fact we want that system. We want that Texas A&M RB1. We want that Joey McGuire RB1 based on what we saw with Taj Brooks the last couple of years. We know we want that Lance Leopold RB1. But if you're unable to get, you know, the favorites for those positions early on, why not take a shot of those on the second guy in the back end of drafts? Like, let me take a look, example here. Like Reuben Owens, in this draft, this particular draft that Ethan took, he took Owens in 17th round, pick 6. Le'Veon Moss went 8 rounds earlier in the 9th round. Peyton Lewis, right? Ethan got him in the 18th round. DeShaun Bishop went in the 14th round. Jacoby Williams, Ethan got him here in the 20th round. Quentin Joyner went first round. I love Quentin Joyner. Let me be very clear. This is not me endorsing like, oh, all these later round guys are the better value. If you want a more in-depth discussion on that, I'd heavily check out last week's episode with CTN where I discussed this a lot with Joe. But like, there are certain positions where I do think there are certain systems where I do think it's worth taking a shot on the second favorite guy there, right? Because the gap between their ADPs is not the gap that I think actually exists between them in real life, right? Like Jacoby Williams, I think, is a lot closer to Quentin Joyner than their first round and second and first round and 20th round ADPs would suggest. Another example, LaShawn Williams in this draft, 24th round, Daniel Hyshaw went 11th, right? A couple of lesser extents, Evan Pryor, 14th, Tommy Walker, 12th round and stuff like that. But to me, if you're not somebody like me, right? Like I recently just did projections for my running backs, and I do feel pretty comfortable with taking shots on guys that I think have a decent shot at being one RB1s and good RB1s for this system later on. But like for the first couple of drafts that I was doing, I would get to the second half of drafts and I wouldn't know what the heck to do at running back and maybe want to take 10 running backs in a row to start the draft just so I didn't have to worry about it later. But now I've kind of gotten to the point where I think there are two viable strategies. If you feel good about some of the later round guys, yeah, shoot for it. But absolutely another way you could go about it is look at some of those guys that are going in like the first 4 to 5 rounds of drafts. Think about it to yourself and say like, oh, maybe that running back room isn't as solidified as we think it is. Let me take a shot on the other guy much later. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that because college fantasy football unnecessarily is tied into their role or may not be tied into their role halfway through the season. So taking a shot on some of these back end players is exactly a recipe that I like to bring into some of my drafts. Some guys that I like to pick up, Jaden Nixon from UCF. He's great, a favorite call of mine, running back that I like to take kind of late there. There's another one at the top of my head. CJ Campbell from Rutgers. I know Antoine Raymond kind of gets taken a little bit earlier than him, which is rightfully so. Take Antoine Raymond, what he was able to do when he was given full load there at the back end of the season. He was terrific. I think he scored 3 touchdowns in his final game. So draft Antoine Raymond, draft CJ Campbell on the back end, draft Jaden Nixon on the back end. These are the guys that could take hold of these running back rooms. All it takes is either an injury or a couple fumbles, and these guys are the workhorse backs in winning you your leagues, man.
Yeah, a couple other guys I'll highlight here. You already called out CJ Campbell, which is funny. That's an ADP situation that shifted very quickly in the offseason where Campbell was going early at first, and then he quickly fell behind. Raymond went up. Now it's completely reversed. It's a couple other guys. Jordan Marshall at Michigan, right? Like Justice Haynes going here. Let's see. Let me pull up ADP again real quick. Where is Mr. Haynes going? Where are you, buddy? There's Jamal Haynes. There's too many Haynes going on here. Where is he?
He's right there. RB 22,
right? Like,
yeah.
I would, again, let me be very clear again. I'm not endorsing the idea that Marshall is the RB1 over Haynes, right? But their ADP gap is massive. One that I would endorse, actually, at this point is Dylan Jones of Wisconsin. I like Darian Dupree a lot. I like that he was kind of the second back last year. But, boy, I can't ignore the way that people are talking about Dylan Jones and the step he has made up this offseason, right? And he's going way behind where Darian Dupree is going. Jadarian Price, obviously, I think Love will be the RB1, but like you said, Chris, one injury to Love, and Jadarian Price could be a workhorse back there at Notre Dame. Evan Pryor at Cincinnati, a lot of people are taking on Tobby Walker transferring over from Wisconsin. Makes a lot of sense, but Pryor's a pretty good back on his own, and he's been with Cincinnati already. So,
yep.
Any other guys kind of come to mind? I got the ADP pulled up here, so I can just kind of...
I know Kanye Udo.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Right there, Arizona State. Kyson Brown kind of gets taken much well after him. He's a guy that could be thrust into a role if Kanye Udo isn't the guy we all expect him to be. C.J. Donaldson at Ohio State. I know James Peoples been pegged to be the RB1 for that team going into the season. But again, man, like we said, all it takes is one injury, a couple fumbles, a bad day, a couple bad days, and the running back room is flipped on its head. So definitely take some shots on some of these back end running backs that could be thrust into starting roles.
Telly Johnson and Jalen Poe at NIU is another one that kind of comes to mind that I think people need to keep a little bit more of an eye on over there. So, all right, let's move on to your next one here, Chris. I just realized. There we go. All right. You have a draft here from our good buddy Steve here at SJ Jaxo on Twitter, and you wanted to highlight his first 10 picks and talk about kind of what makes a good start in a CFF best ball. So what do you got for us, Chris?
Yeah, before I start, just touching on that last one. I don't know about you, Jared, but I absolutely despise drafting with Ethan, man. Guy's just a thorn in my side.
No, he's too good for his own good, and he drives me nuts in drafts. Yeah.
Drives me absolutely bonkers, man. But yeah, what makes a good start? What makes a good start is nailing your first 10 picks. Jacko here was drafting from the 101, which is even more important with your first 10 picks. You kick things off in the draft, but you don't get to pick until 212, 301, while the board completely flips every way until it gets to your pick. In my personal opinion, at the 101, you're not chasing trends. You're surviving the draft room earthquake. You're watching running backs fly off the board. Your favorite wide receivers go to your arch rival while you sit there and twiddle your thumbs and watch your queue just absolutely dry up. There's three things that I like to do from the 101 is you need to spot positional runs before they start to take advantage of your queue. Catch the teardrops early and stay cool. No FOMO picks. Don't get afraid or think that you have to reach up to take a quarterback because you see four fly off the board before your next pick. What I loved with what they did with this draft, they started it off with Jeremiah Smith, to some, the CFF wide receiver one. You could put Jordan Tyson in that conversation. I'm not going to argue with you, but Smith is a solid pick to start your draft. Round two, they went Antonio Williams, another high-volume wide receiver. Stayed in the tier, didn't need to reach. What they did next is they didn't try to take a high quarterback, a high-tier quarterback. They went with a little bit of balance. Snuck in Justice Haynes. The reports from spring in Michigan have been terrific. He's looked great. He's going to fight for that running back one role in Michigan. Then he followed that by Jonah Coleman out of Washington, another potential bell cow running back. What I like what he did next as well is now he solidified his quarterback room in the fifth round with Parker Navarro. Some have him as a top five quarterback going into the season. If he can give you that potential potential output with that room that you've already built with your positional players. Parker Navarro is a great accent to those. He rounded out his running back room with Emmett Johnson in the sixth round at running back 39 in this draft. He's locked in his running back depth with those three running backs. Took his quarterback two in round seven with Avery Johnson. Two starting QBs at QB9 and QB10. So he soaked up some good value there. Round eight, another reliable starter wide receiver in Trent Walker out of Oregon State. With his wide receiver room in Jeremiah Smith, Antonio Williams, and his wide receiver three, respectively, in Trent Walker, he's starting to build some great depth. Round nine, he took your boy, Dylan Carson, as running back 45 in this draft, which I think is a great value.
He doesn't go there anymore, I can promise you that.
No, not at all.
You can thank me and Elliot for that one.
Well, thank you very much. And then round 10, he got a top three tight end and Joe Royer out of Cincinnati. So he was able to really drive home a solid start to his draft, especially picking out of the 101. He stacked volume, he stayed in value tiers, and he avoided reaches. He nailed those first 10 picks, and that to me is mastery drafting out of the 101. It isn't about the best player, it's about riding out the board swings and having a complete roster by round 10. And this drafter here, he knows what he's doing, man.
I would agree. That was kind of the thing that really stuck out to me with this draft is, like, he's really hit on all of his positions by the time round 10 has come about.
Yep. Yep.
Right. You feel good about your starting lineup, which is exactly where you want to feel by the time you're getting to round 10. You've got all your starters kind of lined up and everything like that. And I was kind of looking at it as you were describing it because I was curious. I'm like, okay, it feels like he's getting some really good value on, like, all of these guys for the most part. Obviously, you know, at the 101 pick, you're going to take whoever. Right, but you know, Antonio Williams, right, he got there at the end of the second round, that's right at ADP. Antonio Williams goes off at 22.5 in ADP. He got him here at 24. Justice Haynes, maybe a little bit high. I wonder if I have something messed up in the ADP because I have Justice Haynes going off at 44.5, but I feel like he has not been going off that late ever. So maybe I got a mistake in there somewhere. But Jonah Coleman, right? He's a guy that, where is he on my ADP? Where are you, Jonah? I just saw you. There he is. RB17 usually goes off at 26.2. Here he gets him at 45. That's huge value right there. I know a lot of people aren't super excited about Coleman, but if you're just looking at this just from a value perspective compared to ADP, he's just grabbing guys that fall to him. Parker Navarro, another guy that he's drafting right there at ADP. He's letting the board come to him. Right, Emmett Johnson, Avery Johnson, another great combo there of Johnsons. And then this is also, again, a very, like, that Trent Walker pick, I know some people might kind of scoff at that because, you know, Oregon State wide receiver one, how valuable is that? I got Walker projected for 80 receptions this year, and this is in a full point PPR best ball here. That could help him out a ton. And then again, obviously, you mentioned already, you got the incredible value with Carson there. I have to imagine this is an early draft that you're pulling this from here, but even still, like, I would agree. Nailing your first 10 picks to me means you look back on your first 10 picks and you sit there and say, this is a group of players that if I had to rely on every single week, like say there was no bye weeks, if I could only rely on these 10 players, I would feel pretty good about myself. Because I was just sitting there thinking, I'm like, I'm not a big fan of Antonio Williams. Because like personally for me, like I wouldn't say he nailed this because I'm not a big fan of Antonio Williams this year. I just mentioned like not everybody's a big fan of Jonah Coleman and stuff like that, but I was kind of thinking to myself like, all right, what does it mean? But obviously that's just personal preference at that point, right? So it's like, how do we apply that to everybody else? What does nailing your first picks? And I think that's the best way I could describe it is like, you look at your first 10 picks and you say, if these are the only 10 players that I had to rely on this year, do I feel good about this? If you say no to that question, I think you did your first 10 picks wrong.
Yeah, because middle draft, you're starting to fill out your roster, some high floor guys, back end of the draft, you're chasing darts at that point. And if you don't have a solid foundation, I mean, you're not building a house on toothpicks, my man. If you don't have a solid foundation, your whole house of cards is going to come crashing down. So you want to make sure you nail those top 10 picks. And then it gives you the ability to get a little loose with the back end and take some shots. If you look at who he picked at the second half of his draft, he's got Carson Beck, Jamarius Haynes, Jeremy Bernard. He got Ethan Vasco, Sam Roush. So there's some potential for some high value players at the back end of your draft. And you can afford you the ability to, hey, I like this. I like player X, but player X usually goes three rounds later. But because I got a solid foundation, I have the ability to reach up and maybe make my reaches outside of the first 12 to 15 rounds. I can do that a bit later, man. So
no,
Yeah, go ahead.
I would say I think that's a great point, right? Like it does kind of afford you to feel a little bit better about reaching in those later rounds rather than feeling bad about that reach early on. Exactly, right? Like let the board come to you in the top 10 rounds, right? Now again, like if you reach one round earlier, that's fine, right? But like I've seen people, they'll take a guy who's, you know, goes like 5-6 rounds later and they draft him up in the third round. I'm like, okay, these top couple rounds are like relatively solidified at this point in ADP, unless you're drafting with a whole bunch of people you'd never drafted before, in which case I kind of understand, you know, being a bit more aggressive, right? Because you don't really know what to expect with those people. But in the CFF community, if you're drafting with guys like, you know, who are in Carp's Discord or here at Campus of Canton or Devi Royale or, you know, the CFF site, you kind of know the trends of what people are going to do. And so, like you said, those first couple 10 rounds, just let the board play. Like, play the ADP game a little bit there, and that'll afford you the ability to be more aggressive in the back end.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely.
All right. This is my last team that I want to highlight here. This is another one from Ethan. So, Ethan, I'm glazing you up today. Don't get too big of a head here. But, again, Ethan just does a really good job of highlighting some of the strategies that I think are really, really good. And this is, again, I did one with quarterbacks. I did one with running backs. Now I'm going to highlight a good strategy I think is good with wide receivers. And, again, it's specifically for people who maybe struggle with wide receivers, right? Like, you feel good about identifying value at quarterback. You feel good about identifying value at running back, but you're like, man, I can never, ever hit those wide receivers, man. And so maybe you're tempted to, you know, do a ton of wide receivers in like your first 10 rounds, just load up on that position and then take shots everywhere else. And I'm telling you, there are easier ways to go about that to where you don't have to sacrifice at other positions in order to get some good value at the position that you think you're weakest at. And Ethan, I think, does a great job here because my thesis for this draft is this. Just because wide receivers this year are very unknown doesn't mean the systems are. And what I mean by that is that you should absolutely be looking at some of these best passing systems and just fill your wide receiver room with options from those teams. Wide receivers are already the most variable position outside of tight end that you're going to see in CFF. And that's just the nature of the game, right? You're going to have, you know, your target hogs, you're going to have your clear number one guys, right? But the receiving position by nature is designed to be spread around, right? When you're passing the ball, you're looking for multiple options, you're making multiple reads, right? So you're going to have more variance at this position. So you might as well target the system itself because, you know, the system's going to score points. You know, the system is going to provide that opportunity. Ethan does a fantastic job here with this. He takes two save guys early on in this draft. He takes Jordan Tyson, Easton Messer. Fantastic start in your start there. He could have two guys with 120 targets on the season, right?
Easy.
Very safe floor. But then he waits all the way until round 11 before he gets his next wide receiver. And to me, I'd be like, oh, I'm a little worried about that. But here's the thing. He drafts Devin McEwen out of UTSA, Coy Eakin out of Texas Tech in the 12th round. He drafts Landon Sides out of North Texas in the 15th round. He drafts what I assume is either Danny Scudero or Malachi Riley out of San Jose State. There in the 20th round, he took Nick Nash as a placeholder. I didn't have time to reach out and ask him who it was. I assume it's Scudero, but yeah. I know he's a Malachi Riley fan as well. And he takes DeAndre Moore out of Texas in the 21st round. He takes Anthony Smith in the 24th round, and he takes Jonte Cook there in the 29th round. Maybe got a little lucky with Cook there transferring right in the middle of the draft, but even so, What do, of those, what, how many guys we got here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. What do 5 out of 7 of those guys have in common, Chris?
They're in good systems.
That's the vague answer. But in particular, 5 out of 7 of those guys are in top 10 pass attempts per game teams, right? UTSA, 10th. Texas Tech, 6th. North Texas, 2nd. San Jose State, 1st. Syracuse, 3rd. Like, he's just targeting systems that he knows are going to have a ton of passing downs. Volume. They're going to get that volume. Now, maybe he doesn't know if it's going to go these guys' way, right? There's that variance that gets involved there, right? But you're going to up your chances if you're going after guys in systems that are, again, you know the passing downs are going to be there, right? Even DeAndre Moore and Anthony Smith, right? One, East Carolina, I'd love to know what their backhand, I don't have their, like, their second half passing stats compared to the first. They were 47th, which is still top 50 in pass attempts per game. I imagine that was a little bit higher once they got Caden Hauser in there at quarterback.
Yep.
DeAndre Moore, like, that's just, you're just targeting a good system. Top 25 team and scoring points per week, right? Like, you know there's a shot that he could be the wide receiver one. I think this is the way you kind of fill out your wide receiver room if you don't feel great about drafting wide receiver late. Just target the systems and take your shots on different guys, right? Obviously, still do your research, still, like, know which guys typically do well, like, you know, the slot versus outside guys. Is it a more balanced guy? But if you're just kind of sitting there wondering, like, all right, what's the tiebreaker here? Just look up which team's most likely going to pass more per game and just go with a guy like that. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, solid, solid advice. Again, another, I think I was in this draft with Ethan, but it's just another solid draft by him. Those late round wide receivers, a couple guys I like, Josh Dallas out of Georgia Southern. He's a guy I love just grabbing late.
Mm-hmm.
Milliner from UAB is another guy. Nick Anderson, LSU. I don't know where he's at ADP right now, but he's just another wide receiver. That
wide receiver 38.
Oh, so he's definitely moved up from the last draft I've been in. But
he is one of those that goes way up and down in drafts.
Yeah, he's going to fluctuate. And then I know the wide receiver room is a little bit busy right now with Chris Bell and Callan Lacey, but I kind of like the Trayshon Hurry transfer. He's a guy mm-hmm. that I like targeting in the, you know, back end of my drafts because, like you said, the passing volume is going to be there with Louisville, and I'm going to attack that.
There's plenty of guys here in the back end that you can feel really good about if you're just targeting those systems, right? Like, for example, like Sean Wilson out of Florida Atlantic, right? He doesn't have a super high ADP, at least hasn't gotten up there super high yet. We know Zach Kittley's going to want to toss the ball. Not every target can go Easton Messer's way as much as we might want it to, right? So he's somebody I think is worth a shot there in the last 10 rounds, right? Anthony Smith, as I gave an example there. Darren Gill, any of the Syracuse wide receivers really at this point, because that's completely up in the air right now. We know they're going to want to toss the ball around, especially with Steve Angeli there now. Brandon Innes, Bryce Rogers, either of those two Ohio State wide receivers, you want to take a shot there. Either of the South Alabama wide receivers, anybody at Colorado State. Like, again, these are all systems that you know are going to chuck the ball around a ton. So you might as well take shots on guys like that. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah. Use those late rounds to take some shots on some high ceiling potential wide receiver ones, or just high volume. Back ends are 4.
Yeah, a couple of guys that just came to my mind now here as I was thinking about it, but like Xavier Thomas at LSU, Jordan Dwyer at TCU, yeah. Or even Joseph Manjack at TCU as well. Like, again, as much as I want every target to go Eric McAllister's way, like, we know they're going to throw it a ton, that there could be two guys that end up being good there. So, all right, Chris, let's move on to your final draft that you want to highlight here. And this one comes to us from our good buddy Elliot Bacon Fueled. And you highlighted a draft that had a really good start. You seem to think that Elliot had a really, really good finish here at the end of this draft. What do you like about his draft here?
Yeah, I like that he chased some decent upside with the back end of your drafts. The late round 17 to 30 can make or break your season. That's something that we've kind of touched on throughout this episode. Don't go safe. Don't try to chase depth or vibes. Swing for starters who can flip your rosters in these season-long tournaments. Best ball's not head-to-head. You're trying to gain as much points as you can. Use those back end of your drafts to try to solidify some high upside guys. And I think he did that. I love what Elliott did at the back end of his draft with this one. He got Tanner Kaziol, who transferred from Wisconsin to Houston, from Ball State, where he had a great season last year. Big bodied slot wide receiver playing tight end. Perfect tight end three. He took him as his tight end three in this draft to kind of give him some of those bigger weeks in a system where you're drafting. I like to draft 10-10-6-4. Having a player like Kaziol as his tight end three, you'll take that, surrounding him with two studs at the position. Another player that I like that he picked with pick 18 as well with Houston, Connor Wegman, dual threat QB in this Houston offense, where they've already been quoted to saying that they're going to expect their QB to use their legs a lot. So there's a potential for Wegman to have some big weeks, and in a quarterback room where he's built quite a good standard there with his team, he's going to be able to use Wegman's boom weeks to his liking. Another pass catching running back, high upside, Jakeel Middlebrook out of Middle Tennessee. He was top 15 in FBS targets the last 6 weeks of 2024, and through that time he averaged 10.4 fantasy points per game. They didn't have any big running back transfers come in to Middle Tennessee. Frank Pezant's gone. So there's a pathway to fantasy points for Middlebrook in that offense. And then 29, he took one of my favorite players in the offseason, JUCO transfer, Cincinnati, Jeff Caldwell. Tony Johnson's off to Miami. Henderson and Mays are gone to the NFL, and they've been raving about Caldwell all spring. So there's a potential there where he could see a high volume of red zone targets. So if he exits a game with 60 receiving yards, two touchdowns on 4 to 5 catches, you'll take that with a player that you're drafting in the 29th spot of your draft. That's the kind of production you want to chase. And then you mentioned him earlier, drafting Jordan Dwyer with pick 30 to round out the rest of his team on that TCU offense, that high volume pass attack offense. It's just got upside written all over it. So for me, rounds 17 to 30, skip the backups, skip the freshman zeros, go for broke, chase the natty, and win your leagues, man.
I mean, and I can highlight even more players on this roster, right? And it perfectly encompasses a lot of what I've already been talking about, right? Drew Messemaker and Haas Haney are his last two quarterbacks that he took in this draft. He took safer guys earlier on, Haynes King. You know, Diego Pavia. Who else did he take?
Rushing upside,
right? Like, and then you can potentially win this entire league if both Haney and Messemaker hit, right? Like those, they both have 30-35 point per game upside. One I like was Keyshawn Singleton, right? Like I like Chaz Dimrod. I like that he's kind of following his coach there to USF. But Singleton's been there. He looked pretty good at the end of last season. So, you know, zag when others are zigging there with chasing Nimrod. Rodney Fields at Oklahoma State, right? A lot of us are zeroing in on Freddie Brock. I personally am zeroing in a little bit there as well. But I don't blame people for taking a shot elsewhere in that running back room. Because if he becomes Mike Gundy's RB1, you're grabbing him here in the 22nd round.
Gold, man.
Absolute gold. And I need to do a little bit more research on Jeff Caldwell there. I think that's a great call out there. Because last 2 years, Xavier Henderson, wide receiver 1, 99 targets. In 2023, 12 games, 98 targets. That's pretty dang safe. And there's not really much else competition in that room. Curious, Chris, off the top of your head, Among wide receivers that played for Cincinnati last year, what do you think, which or the wide receiver that is returning with the most amount of targets, how many targets do you think a receiver had last year?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not going to be generous. I'm going to go with 22.
Three.
Three? Oh, so I was generous.
You were being generous. Because, yeah. Like, again, they lose that you mentioned Tony Johnson, the portal. Burkhalter left. Aaron Turner left. Tyron Smith left. They bring in, you know, Cyrus Allen and Caleb Goody as well, but there's really not much competition there. And Caldwell could absolutely be a beast there with, you know, if you lock him in for 99 targets, it's a great, great shot there at the end of drafts. That's just Elliott being smart and paying attention to spring camps there. But
sharp drafter, man, sharp drafter.
But again, and like you said, his back end of this draft really does show exactly that, right? He's just chasing that upside, looking for guys that it could explode beyond even what we saw last year. And, you know, he's letting guys take Hudson Clement early on in the draft while he takes Justin Bowick here in the 27th round. Yep. He's letting guys take Bryson Donaldson in the second round of drafts, and he's taking Elijah Gillum here in the 28th round, right? Just really smart drafting overall from Elliott here. So, all right, Chris, we're getting to the end of the show. I'm shocked. I'm not used to the show only lasting about an hour here and everything, man. I guess you got any final thoughts? Obviously, we're working on stuff and everything here, but as you continue to go through your best ball drafts and everything like that, I guess what is kind of your takeaways you've had so far, and like what are you going to try to apply moving forward? Obviously, the stuff we discussed here today, but what kind of other stuff?
As much as I enjoy drafting early, maybe wait until after the spring transfer portal, because a lot of these teams have taken giant hits of mine, especially my G5 only draft. I just been absolutely
I was
ravaged.
Not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Oh my God. I thought I did so well until the spring transfer portal opened and closed, and now my team's absolutely decimated. But no, just for me, college fantasy football, knowledge is key, man. The more information you can get, the better opportunity you're going to have to succeed come the end of the year. As you can see by a lot of these drafts we've touched on, a lot of it is information-based picks. Like this last one we just covered with Elliott Baconfield, with the, like you mentioned, Bowick, Jeff Caldwell, Dwyer, Hedney from Oklahoma State there. These are guys that are going to win you your leagues, and you know to pick them because you have the information that leads you to these picks over your league mates. Like, I don't think some of these guys were even drafted in the earlier drafts that we were taking part in. And if they were, I can only imagine how those drafters are laughing right now with some of these picks they made. So just make sure that you can get a hold of the most information you can going into your draft, because unlike the NFL, where there's 32 teams and information is at an overload, following guys like Jared, Campus to Canton, Chasing the Natty, Baconfield with all the great stuff that he does is going to help you find success.
Yeah, kind of similar to you, right? Like, the spring portal especially is so frustrating, right? And like, it's the risk we take, right? Drafting that early is the reason why we only have like $5 put on these drafts, right? Because like, we know that there's so much that can still change between now and then. And it does provide us good information just to get a baseline idea of like where people are valuing these things. But yep. Next, like if I'm already thinking towards next year and everything, right? Like, I think one of two things is going to happen. Either I'm going to be getting involved in best balls heavily a little bit later, or what I'm probably going to end up doing is I'm probably going to work on my projections a little bit earlier, because I'm not going to lie. I've projected out running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. Now, again, these are back-of-the-napkin projections. It's not like a whole setup where, like, you know, I've assigned every team this amount of pass attempts, so I got to split up the targets this way, that way, and stuff like that. That's a whole different deal. This is me just looking at systems, identifying patterns over the last couple of years and stuff like that. But boy, does it really, really help you kind of get your rankings kind of in order. Really kind of makes you feel like you have something more definitive than just kind of going off of vibes and stuff like that. That's really what you're doing early on and early on. And now I look back on some of my early drafts and I'm like, boy, I would not have made that pick if I saw the projections that I see now and everything like that. And it does kind of help you, like, kind of stand apart from everybody else as well, right? Like, it gives you a reason to, you know, disagree with a player going as high as they are or as low as they are and have some kind of numerical backing to it. So I would suggest to everybody, if you have time, like, again, it doesn't have to be anything fancy, but just kind of getting a baseline number for yourself of what you expect out of certain players helps a lot. And it's definitely changed the way I've drafted already. Like, as I mentioned before, I was deathly afraid of drafting running backs in the second half of drafts early on, because again, like, I, after a point, it just felt like an absolute wasteland. But now that I've kind of projected things out, I'm like, okay, there's some value that's still kind of falling later here that I can feel pretty good about. And then I can mix that in with some of those, you know, zag running back picks I was talking about earlier to kind of make a more complete roster, in my opinion. So that's probably what I'm going to see a lot more of here moving forward. Last position I still have to do is quarterbacks, and that's going to be a whole lot of fun doing all those guys, because I feel like they're all going to end up right in the same range as each other.
One giant tier.
Exactly. So before we get out of here, though, just remind everybody again, you said it already at the beginning of the show, but just remind everybody here at the end, yep, what it is you do and what they can expect from you moving forward.
Well, thanks for having me again, Jared. Absolute blast breaking down some of these drafts and glazing our fellow drafters. You can find me at FFCrispy on X and on Fantasy and Frames Network on the One Foot Down College Fantasy Football Podcast. Look for us next Monday where we will be breaking down. That's always a tongue twister for me. Too many W's.
Oh, yeah.
Freshmen to fear. Freshmen that we think are going to produce in this upcoming 2025 college fantasy football season. And I'm so, so, so excited for the Tadpole Bowl, man.
Oh, I'm excited about the Tadpole Bowl as well. By the way, if you have not signed up already, www.scottfishbowl.com/college if you're interested in participating in the college version of the Scott Fish Bowl. I believe Eric said we already have 500 people signed up for that thing already. Yeah. It's going to be absolutely insane. So stoked for that. Yeah, definitely, definitely looking forward to that. Again, go check out Chris's content and everything and reach out to him on Twitter. He's a super friendly guy. Always willing to answer questions for people and everything. But yeah, until then, appreciate all of you guys listening. We'll be back here next. Well, maybe, maybe not. I'll be on vacation next weekend. So I'm currently trying to see if I can get you guys some substitute teachers for CTN this upcoming week. But if not, I'll definitely see you guys back here in 2 weeks. And what we'll be covering? Not entirely sure. That's always what the fun part is in May, is that we can always kind of, you know, do different topics that we don't already do and everything. But by the time June comes around and everything, we'll be getting back into a lot of the normal stuff that we end up doing there. But Chris, really appreciate you having you on, man. You're always a blast. Thanks. Appreciate all of you guys out there. But we have come to the end of our show. If you guys have not already, make sure you leave a like, a comment, and a subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus to Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. Until then, really appreciate you guys, and hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed couple of weeks. See y'all.